Hello, everyone. My name is Ryan Garcia. We've got a lot on the prospects report to talk about today. The Yankees trade for Ryan Weathers. We'll discuss kind of what that prospect package looks like. We'll talk a little bit about the international free agent situation. Not going to give you a full recap on the guys who they signed because I think there's still a little bit of like it happened yesterday, the opening of the signing period. So I'm going to give it a little bit of time so we can assess the full scope of what the Yankees end up doing, get a little more information before I start reacting. And we'll spend some time on that. And we'll take all of your questions right here on Fireside Yankees. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We appreciate you guys for being here. And if you like this kind of content, make sure you like and subscribe. Every single Friday, we'll have another prospect report. So again, make sure you like, subscribe, turn your notification bell on so you can get notifications on our uploads. We've got tons of really good content. And without further ado, let's start with the return the Yankees or the Marlins got for Ryan Weathers. Ryan Weathers brought the Marlins Dylan Lewis, Brendan Jones, Dylan Hasso, and Juan Mathis. Now, the top guy in this deal was Dylan Lewis. Dylan Lewis this past season had a 121 WRC plus across two levels of minor league baseball, that being single A and high A. He hits the ball incredibly hard. He had exit velocities north of 113 miles per hour recorded this past season. He hits the ball hard. He started making more contact as he came up the levels. I know the slash line is not immediately impressive. A 237, 321, 445 slash line is not going to really knock your socks off, but the high A run environment specifically is very pitcher friendly. The average OPS down there is closer to 600 than it is to 650 or 660. Like, this is a really bad run environment. And when you look at what Dylan Lewis is able to provide for the Marlins, he's a high upside player who comes along with three other position players who are not nobodies. Like, these are position players who could be big leaguers for various reasons. So Lewis was a consensus top 10 in the organization. I know that that wasn't the case going into the year. I know they kind of broke out. And even in the middle of the year, not really a consensus top 10 guy. But as the season went on, as we got closer to the offseason, became abundantly clear that he must be in your top 10. If you have a publication that didn't have him in the Yankees top 10, throw that publication away. Now, he hit 22 home runs, stole 26 bases, could end up being an above-average defender in center field. So there's some real, like, good markers here. Hits the ball hard, could play center field, runs the base as well, good athlete, 22 years old, going to turn 23 in June. There's enough good here that you can sit back and go, hey, this guy could become a top 100 prospect even. So I like this for the Marlins, and for the Yankees, it's a relatively high price to pay in terms of the headliner, but you are getting 3 years of a starting pitcher. We talked about Ryan Weathers already. I'm not going to really sit here and sell you on Ryan Weathers at all. I already have a video on that, so I'll you can like check it out. I'll see if I can put a card up here. I'm not really sure how to use YouTube sometimes. But some of the other prospects dealt in this deal include Brendan Jones. Brendan Jones was in Double A. He's the guy who's the most major league ready in this deal. Had a 126 WRC plus last year, 365 on base percentage, 415 slug, 250 average in Double A. Picked up the strikeout rate a little bit in Double A, but that's because he was swinging a little bit more. He was hitting the ball harder. He had a massive increase in isolated and slugging percentage. So isolated power, slugging percentage, both those marks went up. This is a guy who I view as a Brett Gardner kind of clone at times. Now, obviously, the median outcome here is not a 40 wins above replacement outfielder. I think Gardner was a better defender, but I'm just kind of looking at this from the offensive standpoint. Jones is just a very gritty, intense competitor, can hit the ball like hard enough to get the ball out the yard at the right field. Not sure that's going to play in Miami, but in Yankee Stadium, it would have played really well. And I'm really stoked that he's going to get a better chance of playing the big leagues next year. We've had him on twice on this podcast. Really great guest to interview. Really good dude. And happy that he's going to get a better chance to go to the big leagues. I'm sad, obviously, to see him go because he was a guest on here. And, you know, getting to talk to him was awesome. And, you know, the hope was to see him in New York. But, hey, he's a good player. He's a fun player. And hopefully this ends up turning out well for Jones and gives him the opportunity to go play in the big leagues. That's part of the excitement here for some of the prospects where the path to the big leagues is a lot cleaner. Dylan Hasso put up a 115 WRC plus, 257 average, 326 on base, 400 slug, 13 home runs, 127 games played. Just a really, really, really solid story. Like, this was a cool story that went under the radar on the farm system. You have this guy who was not really hitting that well in single A. He gets moved up to high A, plays a couple games there, you know, is okay at that level. and was kind of he was an undrafted free agent. There was no prospect hype around Dylan Hasso at all. Like, this was an undrafted free agent. And then he bursts onto the scene in 2025, puts up a 115 WRC plus and a 725 OPS in AA. And you might go, Ryan, that's not particularly impressive. Well, this is a guy whose first year is in AA, was in his first year in AA, 22 years old. So he was younger than the average hitter the average hitter at that level. This is not a superstar or anything of the sort, but this is definitely a fun hitter. Like, his profile is pretty cool. He's a pretty aggressive swinger. He makes a decent amount of contact in zone. I think that the Marlins need to find a way to kind of cut down the chases a little bit and try and just get him to be a little more measured in that strikeout to walk rate. Don't love a 24.2% K rate and a 7.8% walk rate. But again, like, this is a fun player. This is a player who I'm really excited for and an undrafted free agent. So that's really cool for him. And again, better path to the big leagues. Now, Juan Mathewes is the final player we're going to talk about in this deal because he's the final piece in this deal. He's probably the one who I think had the least amount of, like, publicly talked about prospect acclaim up to this point. Now, Mathewes is not someone you should just scoff at and just kind of go, all right, this guy doesn't matter then in this deal. 40 steals, 3 home runs, 365 on base, 376 slug, 115 WRC+. Not a ton of pop in his swing. Doesn't have, like, the frame for him to be, like, a big pop guy either, but definitely an incredible athlete. Moves very well. Can play the shortstop position and do so pretty well. Lots of contact in zone. A pretty aggressive swing, which is a good sign for the contact rate. This is not somebody who just kind of, like, sits back and waits and waits and waits and is so passive that he doesn't really ever swing and miss. This is somebody who's aggressive relative to the average minor league hitter. So I would expect Mathewes to actually be, like, a plus hit tool guy in the big leagues with the ability to play shortstop, which is a pretty, like, good combination of skills. When you got a good hit tool, when you make a lot of contact and you play shortstop, you are probably a big leaguer. So we'll see if Mathewes, his skill set continues to develop. He's a switch hitter, and if he continues to kind of progress the way he had this past year, but definitely someone who I would consider to have a really high chance of being a big leaguer. You could argue, if it wasn't for the, like, for proximity, obviously Jones is going to be that because he conquered AA. He's likely to start the year in AAA next year, depending on how he plays in spring training. Like, he's the most likely big leaguer in this group, but Mathewes is, like, up there. Mathewes definitely has, like, pretty high big league odds compared to other guys in this deal, and that's considering that Lewis is the best prospect in this deal. And Hasso is, again, he's got proximity working for him. He played in AA, but Mathewes is a really capable shortstop who makes a lot of contact. So I know at Baseball Prospectus, my guy Michael, he did the Yankees list. He spoke about Mathewes and Lewis as well as guys he really liked. So, you know, that's not insignificant at all. Michael's a very smart baseball mind. I suggest you check out the Baseball Prospectus Top 30, not just for the Yankees, for the rest of the league. They're 101. Very, very intelligent people over there. You've got Jared Seidler. You've got Jeffrey as well. I think he does the Mets list. Just some really smart people over there. So I would really suggest you check out that list. I know we reacted to the Baseball America list. I'll probably react to the Baseball Prospectus list in one of these weeks. I just have to find the window given top 30s coming out. International free agent talk is next week, so we'll kind of find a way to squeeze that in there. But that's the recap of this trade, and I know we don't really have a lot to talk about, so we're just going to get straight into your questions. We actually have a healthy amount of questions, so we saved a good amount of time to talk about them. Let's start by talking about the first trade here, and it is from Not So Fun Family One on Twitter. What's your thoughts on Lalaine at this point? We kind of got a question about this last week where it's like, where are you at with Henry Lalaine? And look, I just think we're at the point where he's just not a good enough prospect to rank inside the top 10. You can't rank him in the top 10. Can't justify a top 15 spot if you want to look at it from a certain perspective. I guess now with the trade they made, you had two guys who are clearly in front of him gone. And Mathewes, I would have considered putting ahead of him. I was going to consider putting Mathewes inside the top 20. Lalaine is just, he's too injury prone. The arm talent isn't special anymore. Not that the arm talent was ever, like, outlier special, but it was really good to the point where he was sitting 94 and was topping out at 97. But that's not really the situation that we're in right now. So I personally believe that we have to look at Henry Lalaine and we have to look at him differently than we did before. He is not a premium prospect. If the Yankees were to trade him in a deal, I don't anticipate that he'd headline a big one. So that's kind of where we're at here. Now, we have a big question here from AJ Aaron, my guy here. Why do you think there is so much more demand for hitting prospects than pitching prospects around the league? With the Yankees dealing so many minor league bats, how can we fairly evaluate the strides in hitting development in year two under Jared DeHart? That's a really good question. So the first answer to that question I'd give you is for the demand part. I think pitching prospects are more valuable in the upper levels of the minor leagues when they are, like, surefire, like, high probability big leaguers. And for hitters, think of how hard it is to find a develop a good hitter. It's a lot more challenging. It's a lot less direct. For pitchers, we have like very easy ways to measure very granular pieces of data publicly. And not only can we do that, but we can also get almost immediate feedback on yes, no, on a pitch's quality. So for example, if you throw a four-seam fastball, right? If you throw a four-seam fastball and it's got 18 inches of ride from an average release height, that is going to be a pretty good pitch probably, depending on the velocity. If it's 89, no. But if it's 94, 18 vert, average release, good pitch. And for hitters, it's a little more complicated. High bat speed, makes a lot of contact. Like, those skills don't really exist together. You don't see a lot of high bat speed, high contact guys in baseball in general. So there's that. Like, there's a lot more seesaw effects when it comes to the two most important things when it comes to a hitting prospect, which is contact quantity and contact quality. Usually you have to sacrifice a little bit of one to get a little bit more of the other. Like with Brendan Jones, he struck out more in AA, but he hit for some more power. It was a change he had to make, in my opinion. It was one that was beneficial for his swing, but nevertheless, still an adjustment. In the case of Brendan Jones, you would rather his strikeout rate never increase, but the power increase. For Spencer Jones, right? I'm sure that the strikeout rate's partially elevated because he's trying to elevate the ball more. And if you were to try to get more contact, he'd have to elevate the ball less, which would be detrimental for his swing and for his game power. And he would go from a guy who could hit 30 home runs to a guy who's going to hit like 20 home runs. And there is no world where Spencer Jones is a 20 home run a year over 150 games kind of guy and is a positive hitter in the big league. So that is kind of the difficulty in finding these balance guys, the difficulty in finding out which hitters are going to succeed and which ones aren't going to succeed. Yeah, I think that's the reason why hitting prospects can be a little more valuable to some organizations. And in regards to evaluating the Yankees' new hitting coordinator at the minor league level, I think that you evaluate based on what they get out of the talent. So, for example, Dax Kilby. Like, if Dax Kilby stinks for the next three years, like, I'm going to look at him kind of sideways and go like, hey, like, what happened there? Not him personally, but I'm going to look at Kilby, and kind of go, what happened there? If that just happens once and, like, Lombard has an explosive year this year and, you know, Jones becomes a big leaguer and a quality one, like, you got to evaluate each player based on what they're supposed to be and what you expect out of them and see if they end up either A, hitting, or B, exceeding that. Now, C is underachieving that. If you're continuing to draft these UDFAs, undrafted free agents, and continue turning them into quality prospects, if you continue turning these 10th, 11th round picks into quality prospects, like, I thought the Yankees in year one did a lot of good under him. They did a lot of good under him. Dylan Lewis, Dylan Hasso, Brendan Jones, Juan Mathewis, these guys got traded because these guys made big strides in their previous season or from when they were drafted, or in Hasso's case, he wasn't even drafted. That is a positive, right? Like, that has to work for him. The first year gives him some grace for sure because you generated a lot of strong development stories. Rock Riggio, Rafael Flores. I mean, just guy after guy after guy after guy who really cemented themselves as a quality big league prospect. And I think that gives him some grace, but that's my opinion. From Zach Goldstein, we have, which player is most tradable to add to this farm system? Who do you see as the biggest riser in this organization's ranking? So I'm going to say most tradable outside of inside the top 15. I'd say Spencer Jones because I guess if you sign Bellinger, yes, but if you don't, it's not Jones. It's either Jones or Bryce Cunningham. And the reason I say that is because Hess, LaGrange, and Elmer are so close in MLB proximity compared to Cunningham. They are all like similar in terms of their Rule 5 eligibility. Hess is going to be Rule 5 eligible the same year that Bryce Cunningham is going to be Rule 5 eligible. So I personally don't believe that the New York Yankees should be like, hey, we need to make sure we clear like a 40-man spot for this. Like, you're going to have to clear a 40-man spot for Hess at some point. So we'll kind of see. And when it comes to the New York Yankees and Spencer Jones, like, if they sign Cody Bellinger back, I'm not really sure if the Yankees are going to be in a situation where they've got to, they don't need Spencer Jones at that point because they already have a backup center fielder and a starting center fielder, and they have a lot of left-handed hitters, and I would rather keep Jason than Spencer if we keep Bellinger because you could sign a center fielder next year. Jones is a lot of hit risk. Like, Jones is not a better prospect than Jason was. Jones was never a better prospect than Jason was. And, you know, if Bellinger doesn't sign back, I'd rather keep Jones. And I've made this argument on the podcast. It's like, it kind of depends on where he goes. But if Jones is here, I would imagine Bellinger isn't. If Bellinger is here, I imagine that Jones becomes a lot more easy to trade, but I'm not really sure we can get back for him in the trade market. So that's kind of that. The biggest riser in the organization's rankings, I think it'll be Pico Cone or Mac Cuer. I always bet on college arms, and I guess that's going to answer a question that we'll get into a little bit later. But yeah, I personally believe it's going to be one of the college arms. That's always my bet for the Yankees and their prospect risers. Almost always a guy that they draft pitching-wise. So we'll see how that kind of turns out. How deep fried are we in the IFA class collapse? This is an anonymous question. Yeah, I think this is a big deal. As I said in the previous podcast where I talked about this, I'm not upset that the Yankees fired their director. I think it was a necessary evil. I'm not even particularly upset that a lot of this, like a lot of it's kind of like public in terms of their feud and their issues with their IFA director and their IFA system. Like, the IFA system has not consistently produced good talent at the top end. They've signed a lot of big money players who have not been good or even relevant for the organization. So that's that. But the timing, the inability to sign another director in time, like, those things definitely are really, really, really bad for your PR and to the Dominican Republic, internationally, Venezuela, wherever you sign your IFAs from. The Yankees, this is a bad IFA class. They had a bad IFA class. Their farm system will be worse because they don't have Wandy Osagen, who would have been a top 10 prospect in the system, and I would be talking about him as their second best or third best position player at some point in 2026, because I'd imagine maybe Lombard, actually no, I guess 2027, because Lombard's not going to graduate in 2026. But yeah, that's the issue right there. That's exactly the issue right there. So it's not that they fired the director, it's the timing and the ripple effects, and the trust are going to have to build back. What's stopping me from saying Lombard and Kilby are the next Jeter and A-Rod? That's from Yank Plane 06. The fact that Dax Kilby's left-handed. Which of the college arms from the 2025 Yankees draft class are you the highest on? This is from JD Filippo 04. I'd say number one for me is Pico Cone. Pico Cone to me is like very much a Yankee guy. He's somebody who spins the ball pretty well and has good ride on the fastball and has a funky release point. I love these like weird release height fastball guys. If the Yankees can get him a quality array of secondary pitches, he's very fastball slider. I think a changeup's in vogue. I think you could add a sinker or a cutter. Like, I think there's room for him to be a multi-fastball guy, have a changeup, and then you've got this four-pitch pitcher who throws not like incredibly hard, but has a good max velo. You should be able to sit closer to 93, 94 miles per hour. Again, the weird release height, the weird release angle, all that stuff really plays into the fact that he's got really nasty stuff. Mac Cuer is just a guy who's a lot of the developments on the pitching side of things, the instructs the Yankees do, there's a lot of positive reports there. So we'll see if Mac Cuer can kind of capitalize on some of the momentum he's gotten, especially on Baseball America. But those are my two picks there. Who do you believe has a higher upside as a long-term starter between LaGrange and ERC? This is from Steven Sal, 2003. Now, I'm going to lump this question into a couple of other ones. We have, which arm has the best upside in the farm system? That's from Josh Vack. And then, are we going to drop the LaGrange starter thing and get our version of Yoan Duran out of the bullpen? That's from Yanks Wins. So I'm going to lump all three of these questions together. I hope that's not an issue for you guys. But the upside arm-wise in the farm system is between LaGrange and ERC for me. So, Josh, it answers that question for you. And in picking between LaGrange and ERC, for Steven, I personally believe the higher upside is LaGrange. The guy who has the highest chance of being a starter is Elmer Rodriguez, but I don't believe he has the best chance of being an ace compared to him and LaGrange, because LaGrange has outlier stuff. LaGrange has the best fastball, arguably, in minor league baseball. He has a healthy array of secondaries, a very good changeup, enough breaking ball usage and utility and swing and miss value that you can expect that his sweeper and his slider can be effective pitchers in the big leagues. If he wants to add a two-seamer, I think he could. If he wants to add just kind of expand the mix more, he could. He doesn't even have to. He throws so freakishly hard. His stuff is otherworldly. And the issue, obviously, is his command. Now, I do not think the Yankees should drop the starter role for him just yet. To answer your question, Yanks Wins, the Yankees should not drop him from being a starter just yet. They should get him as close to the big leagues as possible, and then wait and see from there. Because if you look at the New York Yankees, you look at some of their recent pitching development, and you look at some guys like Luis Heel, for example, never really had plus command at the minor league level. So yeah, I personally believe the New York Yankees are in a situation where you look at Carlos LaGrange, he's got the best chance of becoming an ace pitcher out of this group. And if he were to not pan out reliever-wise, yes, I think we'll have our version of Yoan Duran. The stuff is absolutely electric, albeit different repertoire, different like version of that. But big fastball, big changeup, good enough secondaries. That would be disgusting. The final question we have here, does George Lombard Jr. make it to AAA this year? What is your view on the minor league pitching depth? Who's better, Elmer LaGrange, Chesson? Who would you be willing to give up? Would you be willing to give up two of these guys in a Peralta trade? Now, the reason I didn't lump this question into the other questions is because there's too much of this question that we haven't answered. We'll start with Lombard Jr. George Lombard Jr., I think, does make it to AAA this year. He will not open the year in AAA, most likely. I think he'll get to AA and spend half a year at least in AA, unless he has an incredible stretch where he's just destroying the baseball. Then I guess he could move up sooner, but I think the Yankees are going to take their time with George Lombard Jr., but I do think he gets to AAA, and if he doesn't, that is a crimson red flag for his prospect stock. What is your view on our minor league pitching depth? Who's better, Elmer LaGrange? Well, I answered that question. I guess I didn't. So our minor league pitching depth is in a good spot. The Yankees are always able to churn out pitching talent, so I'm not concerned about that. Between Elmer, LaGrange, and Hess, I'm going to rank Elmer number one as my number one pitching prospect in the system. LaGrange will be two, and Hess will be three. Hess is a pretty distant third relative to like the gap between Elmer and LaGrange, but Hess is a good prospect. LaGrange is like back. I go back and forth with him in ER. I think Rodriguez and LaGrange are one and two, and you can flip-flop that, but I have Elmer number one just barely. Hess is a hair behind. And I would be willing to give up one of these guys with a major league pitcher. I personally try to avoid giving up two of them. You know, if you have to trade like LaGrange and Hess for Freddie Peralta, it's not the worst thing in the world, but I'd rather you trade like Heel and like Hess, or like, I guess, like trade like Heel and LaGrange. The reason I say that is because you get 6 years of these guys, and you don't necessarily need Luis Heel as badly as you might need like a Ben Hess. Like, I'll put this. Would you trade Ben Hess for Luis Heel if you knew what Luis Heel was right now? And he was like, let's say the Yankees didn't have Luis Heel. He was on the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Yankees were targeting Luis Heel in a trade. Would you trade Ben Hess for Luis Heel? And I thought about that, and I was like, man, it's not good that I wouldn't immediately say yes. I definitely wouldn't trade LaGrange, and I definitely wouldn't trade Elmer. So I think the goal should be to try and see if the Brewers really like Luis Heel, because if they do, then you can probably save a chip that I wouldn't trade for Luis Heel. Hess is the one that is most expendable, but I would try to avoid trading LaGrange or Elmer if I could, and trying to look at this from a standpoint of trying to get a big leaguer involved in this deal like a Luis Heel. Now, Will Warren's different. Will Warren has 5 years of control, which is why I personally would not sit back and go like, hey, this guy is just flipping away, who cares, because he's got 5 years of cheap control. Actually, we do have one more. This is a pretty funny one. Dax Kilby is the next Bobby Witt Jr. He's not the next Bobby Witt Jr. I'm not gonna push his stock to the point where we're talking about him being the best shortstop in baseball. And Bobby Witt Jr. is a generational shortstop right now. Like, he's playing like a once in a generation shortstop. I'm not going to put Kilby in that camp. He's definitely not the defender. Like, Dax Kilby sticking at shortstop would surprise me. I guess it's young enough. He's young enough where, like, that shouldn't really come to your mind yet. Like, you can't determine where he's going to end up. But a lot of people I talk to are like, he's not a shortstop. So, and you watch, like, the shortstop tape. It's not particularly inspiring. But the bat is definitely very fun. So we'll see how that ends up shaking out. But no, he's not the next Bobby Witt Jr. He's not. Like, Bobby Witt Jr. was the best prospect in baseball. Kilby is very much not the best prospect in baseball, nor does he have the conversation even right now. Connor Griffin's clearly better. Kevin McGonagall, there we go. God, that was bad. He's clearly better as well. Nolan McClain is clearly better. Now, it's not to say that Kilby can't grow into potentially being that. If you ask me who has the best chance of being the number one prospect in baseball in the system, it's Dax Kilby. But as things stand right now, that answer is not him. So, yeah, so that's kind of where we're at. Appreciate you guys tuning in and watching our Yankees Prospect Report. If you like this video, make sure to like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell. We'll have our prospect reports every single week on Fridays. We'll be going live on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We don't have any live content tonight. Unless the deal goes down, we'll try and see if we can go live. I'm not around tonight very much, so we'll kind of see with that. And we've got an exciting baseball announcement we're going to make on the content side. So like, subscribe. See you guys in the next one. Have a great one. Peace out, everybody. Let's go, Yanks. Perfect.